Welcome back. Good to have you all with us here. This happy fun drive here on WEAA. Let me just say, if the spirit moves you during this conversation, don't be afraid to call 410-319-8888 and show your happiness by supporting WEAA, this great radio station in all of our lives. Reminding you, listen to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA. And from school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. And I'm here in the studio with four really incredible artists to talk about the power and light of art in our society, in themselves, what it does to us, how it transforms us and the world around us. Ami Ding is with us. Ami. She's better known as, she's a musician here from Baltimore, plays an incredible sitar and more, serves as development consultant for numbers of arts organizations, including Force Upsetting Rave Culture and Arts Every Day. Mark Kottman is back with us in the studio, Baltimore-based visual artist, owner of the Mark Kottman Gallery in Federal Hill. Vincent Stringer is back with us, coordinator of vocal studies, director of the Opera Workshop, and assistant professor of music here at Morgan State University, and co-founder of Orpheus Music Global, and Michelle, the indie mom of comedy. Listen to me, Dave.
You always say momity.
Momity.
You're creating your own brand for me.
I like that.
Momity.
Momity.
I've heard it before.
You like that?
It's not original. It's good. It's original. No, it's not. You can Google it. It's out there.
You should. Fine.
But thank you.
Okay. Momity. And, of course, she's a former OSI fellow and creator of the Gold Diggers. It's an incredible project, Sankofa Project in Park Heights, with lots of incredible young women. And good to have you all in the studio.
Great to be here, Mark.
So all four of you come from really major and different disciplines of the world of art.
You did good.
Vocal music, comedy, a musician, visual arts. So all very different. And you might intertwine. You might do something else as well. That's fine, too. I'm curious from your perspective, I mean, of getting into the world of art, using that as your expression, as your way of life. Because none of you are making your living. All of you are making your living, at this point, doing the work you love as artists, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I mean, talk about what
I'll jump in. You know, I'm a microphone fiend. I'll jump in.
We know that. We know that.
Now, first of all, just once again, I mean, the arts have informed us for years, either, indirectly or directly. As a stand-up comic, I get the license to say all the things that you wish you could say. And it is the most beautiful thing. And it happened on a fluke because I was a third-year doctoral candidate at Temple University.
Wow.
And so it wasn't like this was intentional, but obviously the universe had something else planned for me, so I'd rather be in alignment than be out of alignment. But needless to say, I get to say all this stuff. I get translator's license. All the stuff you wish you could say, I get to say it, and I get to say it to actually bring the humor aspect out. And it's fun. It's exciting. But no, I would have never thought that this would be my life. But I can't see myself doing anything else now that I've been in it for the last 15 years. Now, in between, I probably would have been a rock star by now had I not had a bunch of babies. But the babies have made me funnier, so now I'm the Phoenix Rising. So, no, the stand-up is one of the most thrilling and frightening things you could ever do. There's no, you can't give the drummer some. There's no band, you know. I can't yell back and say, Maceo, like there's nobody. It's just me and a microphone.
Yes.
And so it is frightening, but when you get in that rhythm, it is riveting. Like, I could not imagine do anything else, like riding a wave if I were a surfer.
A little like being a singer.
Yes, like being a singer for me, I'll tell you, it's a spiritual thing for me, for one. It goes deep. And one of the wonderful things about singing is with the voice, you can express so many different things, and the emotions that you can express, and the way that you can use your voice to actually elevate others, to actually raise them to a place from despair to happiness. You know, and that's a wonderful part of it for me. I love singing in the languages. I like thinking and being in different characters. It allows me to express a bunch of people. You know, I sometimes am accused of being a comic as well. You know, I do
if
a lot of voices.
If you express a bunch of people, that means you're schizophrenic. You know that.
You know, you have to be as an opera singer. You know, I know some pretty whack folk. You know, but it's a wonderful thing. I've been singing for much of my life. I started out as a visual artist and then went into and I played the piano. My father was a church minister, so he was trying to make us a church musicians. And I got stuck with the opera bug because I heard this great black baritone in this coliseum that seated, you know, 20,000 people on a pyramid singing Aida. And I said, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And it just stuck with me. So I'm here doing what I love. Mm-hmm. I'm directing and opera, and I'm teaching voice. And those are the wonderful parts of
it. Well, the funny thing she said before we go to Ami is I was thinking about this, that how many people start in the world of the church, and it takes them someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Much to the chagrin of their parents.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
I like how he said his dad tried to make him a church musician.
You did. He tried.
He tried.
I rebelled. I mean, I've been a church musician. And, you know, I sing at churches and things like that. But, you know, I had to do something more than gospel music.
Right.
That was the thing. And when I discovered that I had this operatic voice, you know, I was the kid in seventh grade, or actually sixth grade, whose voice went from soprano overnight to basso.
Mm. Wow.
And I was Froggy, you know, so I was ridiculed about it. But then when I discovered the voice, it was like, whoa, that's a fun thing.
So, and Ami, I mean, your world is a world of instrumental music.
Well, it's a lot of vocals, actually. More vocals than instrumental. I write and compose with a lot of electronics, and then I also sing. Most of my compositions include the voice, and then some of them include sitar. But it's a lot more of, it's kind of East meets West, kind of experimental dance pop, it's fusion music. And it's interesting that you mentioned the church, because my family is Sikh, and I actually grew up in the Gurdwara, which is the Sikh temple, you know, learning hymns in the Gurdwara, of course, singing in school with the choir. And so all of that really led me to how I'm making music now. And I actually take a lot of Sikh scripture and sort of arrange. I write the melodies to some of that scripture, and I arrange it to include electronics, to include kind of a new world kind of approach. You know, that's kind of one of my ways that I can maintain some attachment and derive inspiration from that tradition, but kind of take it to a new place and really make it contemporary. Yeah.
That's great.
Because it comes out of many traditions. Before we have to go to break here, Dr. Kapman.
How you doing today,
man? All right, man. Good to see you.
Wonderful. Well, it started for me, it's actually, I rediscovered the wonder of the pause from being a child. You know, when you're a child, you wonder about things. And once you begin to wonder about things, you get a direct connection to the universe and everything around you. Mm-hmm. And it's an infinite. It never ends. So once my imagination expanded beyond the container of reality, and to me, the container of reality is going with the formula, with a job, and you're supposed to do this in so many years and do that in so many years. Once it bubbled, all the information I had bubbled and spilled out of the top, and the lid popped up and hit the ceiling, I realized I couldn't fit in that container anymore.
You know?
And I had
that was
expanded.
So visual,
that was
that
great.
Was
thank
so
you.
Visual.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Like a true visual artist.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And you know, just the weight of my being expanded beyond the container of reality.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Whoop, there it is.
That was a sermon there.
You know.
Amen to the arts.
Amen to the arts. And amen to WEAA. So we're about to take a very short break and come right back and tell you why we're so happy here in the studio. All right, here I am, Mark Steiner, right here with Ami Dong, and in the studio with Mark Kottman and Vincent Stringer and Michelle, the independent.
He's
going to
make me
comedy.
Something. He's going to make me something. Independent mommy. The indie mama comedy. You just called me independent as
if
I'm running for office.
Bring it out.
I love you, Mark Steiner.
Stream of consciousness.
Only you stream can remix, remix my brand. I love it. I love it.
411. Oh, no. So, going back to where we were. One of the things I think that, I mean, all four of you have been on the show before in different, for different kinds of conversations. But I think that one of the things that we, you know, we always kind of take art and put it in this place by itself that's the side of life, mm-hmm. as opposed to being in the center of life. I said something about you all making your living at one level or another here as in your art. But a lot of people who do stuff every day, whether they're a firefighter or a nurse or a physician or a carpenter or whatever they do in life or a teacher, and they're still artists. Mm-hmm. That art can be part of our lives and what Absolutely. It does to be part of our lives, mm-hmm. even if it's not what you do 24/7, it's not what gives you your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I like the traffic light repair guy. He cares about everybody. He doesn't even know him. Just fix that mm-hmm. light.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because if he doesn't fix that light, it's going to be a mess out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Mark. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I like when people embrace, I love when you embrace art when you're not even realizing you're embracing it. Have you ever noticed that it's just organically you feel yourself connected to a sunrise or the colors that happen when the sun sets or when you do hear, I wake up to hear, I hear hummingbirds every morning. I happen to live in a community where there's lots of birds, actually a bird watching community. And just to listen to the birds, that's to me, that's the universe giving me art. That's a spiritual experience for me and it's everything that you said. And so we're really fortunate to say that we actually make our living, live our lives doing the art that we do.
Again, when I was thinking about was I taught for 12 years at Baltimore School for the Arts, 10 years at Baltimore School for the Arts of Theater, and I taught acting and theater forever in different places. And one of the things I always said to my students in the very beginning of the year was the vast majority of you sitting in this classroom right now will not be full-time actors when you leave here. Mm-hmm. Just the nature of the existence, you won't. Mm-hmm. But the art you're learning here, whether it's being a painter or a sculptor or a dancer mm-hmm. or an actor, fuels the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
As long as that piece of art's in your life, you know, it's like I remember Billy Murphy, the lawyer, and I ran his campaign for mayor many years back. He was a jazz drummer, still is a jazz drummer, you know, so he had his law, but you got your drumming,
mm-hmm.
you know, and art is just, you need it in your existence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Definitely. I say to, you know, I hear people that they come in the gallery sometime, they say, man, I wish I could paint like you. I can't even draw a stick figure. And I always tell them the same thing. They are art creators and they are art appreciators.
Mm-hmm.
Although you're not talented enough to have some type of art form, maybe not, maybe something's blocking that, but you do have the ability to appreciate. So you can go to a play, you can go to the comedy club, you can come mm-hmm. to the gallery, you can go mm-hmm. listen to some music, go to an opera, and mm-hmm. sit there and absorb that creativity mm-hmm. and feel that fullness. And that top popping off and that bubbleness of wonder from the person that's creating the art form.
I can remember Absolutely. Being in high school and we had a class called Music Perspectives and it introduced us to classical music. And to this day, because of that class, you know, some 30 years later, when I think of classical music, I remember that I fell in love with Bach in the ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that my teacher was so adamant about us understanding the nuances of that piece.
Mm-hmm.
I remember loving Bach, Toccata and Fugue in D minor, mm-hmm. like to this day.
Mm-hmm.
But your little girl from Park Heights, you know what I mean? Just, you know, it's just like once you get introduced to it, it's like you never forget that experience. Mm-hmm. So now my kids actually go to sleep to classical music or they listen to jazz before they go to bed or it's just a part. You're right. It's a part of us.
Right.
And it actually helps to inform how we wake up, how we go to sleep, how we interact throughout the day.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I would love to just hear more about the art that you do with the sitar and all.
Oh, well, I was going to just latching on to what you were saying about I think it's interesting to think about how we phrase like the art of cooking, the art of fixing a traffic light. You know, we talk about we use that phrase, the art of doing something. And I think that when you think about it that way, you think about the approach and just that it's a thoughtful anything you do in life. If you have a thoughtful approach to anything you're doing, whether it's the art of talking on the radio, you know, you can if you have that thoughtful approach to me, that's art. That's making art and that's respecting art. But going on to what I could talk about what I do a little bit. I write and produce with electronics. I use a lot of samples in my work, so I'm really interested in. I grew up listening to Bollywood and Indian classical music. So unlike a lot of people I know, my mom was playing Bollywood records early 80s Bollywood records and Hindustani classical music, and again, Sikh hymns, as I said, growing up listening to religious music. So that was sort of the soundscape that I was exposed to. And I have now, I listen to a lot of that stuff and I take little snippets, and I'm really inspired that by that sound palette. And so I combine some of those older and more traditional sounds with sort of more modern beats and more, you know, contemporary sounds, and then I write songs to those. I add sitar in there. And
so would Sikh kids be like dancing to your music?
I hope so. I think
like
sometimes,
if you put it on in the club, they would be like, this is the hot new beat from Bobby. Like, like they just be like bouncing around like this is my girl.
Yeah,
okay. Just curious.
Well, you know, I'd like to jump in here and say that art frames our world. Everything you see, I mean, looking around this room, there is art in this room, even from the table that we're sitting around, the microphone that we're speaking in. There's a creative process that brought all of this into existence. So someone had to have an imagination, whether it was to take a pencil and draw something, to take some mathematical figures to figure out the calculations of this room to create this beautiful edifice that we're in. You know, there are so many ways to think about art. And I go on to the subject. We talk about STEM and academia, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Mm. And there's a move to, like, you know, the arts are being obliterated. Well,
no, but you add the A and you get STEAM. I'm going to put that in there. You add art and you move to STEAM.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about getting from art to STEAM after we take this break. We're going to go into our transition here. Let's talk about WEAA, which Sublimate, which is Omni's song. Stay with us.
My track.
Okay, Vincent.
Yes. Well, that was the opening scene of Suor Angelica. It is the Ave Maria that happens in the very beginning of the opera, where all the nuns are singing, and it's a beautiful.
So, Vincent, that was amazing. That was that's from what?
That's from the Puccini opera Suor Angelica, and that is the opening of the opera, sung by the nuns as they're in the morning prayers. And it's a beautiful sound. Of course, that's in Latin, but the opera is Italian. So we're doing that here at Morgan this week.
Oh, wow.
Actually, we open on Thursday. We have our dress rehearsal tonight, and we open Thursday morning. And we are doing Suor Angelica and The Devil and Daniel Webster by Douglas Moore.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow.
Are you doing arias? You're doing the whole opera?
We're doing the whole opera. Yes, it's 2 one-act operas.
Fantastic.
And we've been working tirelessly, or I wouldn't say tirelessly. We've been working like crazy people over there at the Murphy Fine Arts Center to pull this together.
Yeah. You know, this is one of the things that I was thinking about this as you were speaking and thinking about something that Mark Kopman has said in this show many moons ago when he was on at one point talking about artwork, about how you don't want to be pigeonholed in just being a black artist and all your art has to be about something black. It has to be about life is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I think about Ami's cross-cultural work with the sitar, bringing these cultures, and think about here at Morgan State University, opera, which began as kind of a European creation, though it had a lot of African-American influences and African influence in it, as a European creation, that art really is born out of specific cultures, but then it becomes this global mix.
Absolutely. Right.
Which is really a metaphor for what we hope to be, you know? Mm-hmm. Like if we really look at it metaphorically, you can take the sitar, you can take opera, you can take the visual arts, you can take stand-up, and you can put it in one space, believe it or not, and someone would appreciate all of it. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty.
We have to create an opera that uses the sitar and has stand-up comedy. Yeah. And then we also then have the visual arts where we can create the sets or the visual images that go in the sets.
I mean,
there's something that's wonderful about, especially I think about live performance because that's what I love and that's what I do. But about any art that just can transcend, like you said, race or culture. I love the idea of thinking about it as a global experience. And I know, Michelle, you asked me, would Sikh kids be bopping to my music? And I said, yes, but also it's everyone. My music, I write my music. It's inspired by, I think, my identity and by what I grew up with and all those influences. But my identity has so much to do with growing up in this country, surrounded by an eclectic mix of people in the era of globalization, you know? Mm-hmm. And so what I feel like I'm outputting and what I hope I'm outputting is something that's for everyone, that mm-hmm. just transcends a specific culture, and that, you know, I achieve to create a sound that's just ecstatic and transcendental, if I might use that word again.
Mm-hmm. These are all great SAT words. Keep going.
Well, what she just said is the power of the art blend. You know, mm-hmm. one thing blends into another. It becomes a universal experience. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned about how people get started and stuff. And I remember when my father used to play John Coltrane in the house all the time, mm-hmm. I thought Coltrane was a beer because he kept saying, Coltrane's cold. And I thought it was a beer. So in my 20s, somebody gave me a John Coltrane T-shirt. And then it connected that John Coltrane was a jazz musician. I listened to him like my whole childhood, and I thought all this time I thought he was a beer.
But like my, Colt 45.
So my first introduction when I bought my own CD, I made the miraculous discovery of getting a Love Supreme. I didn't start with the babies, you know, Giant Steps and all that.
Right, right.
I went right for the Creative Jugular, and something smoke popped out of my head. And then
there you go.
From that point, I was again. Never the same. You know? So.
I love it.
I think that you know, I was thinking about this, how things are fused together in America, and they really are. And I was thinking about your painting, because your painting is really interesting. I mean, the way you approach it. Because some of it is life scenes in the street, but a lot of it has to do with jazz musicians and portraits. Some of it just flowers and gardens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right, right. I would call it my own quiet revolution, because when you look at me, I'm like 6 feet tall, 250 pounds. You see some flowers, you say, everybody in the room painted it but him. I mean, it could be like a monkey. It could be a monkey over there, because the stereotype doesn't fit the art. And I'm a revolutionary with that, because the only art that's only called art is white art. Everybody else is Hispanic art. It's black
right.
art. It's
right.
Asian
mm-hmm.
art. It's
right.
Indian art.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So to mm-hmm. me, it's about art. It's not black right. art. Yeah. I create
yes.
art.
Yes.
I'm black, but I create art.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to dismember mm-hmm. and bobulate that philosophical position.
There's nothing that irks me more than to hear somebody say, he or she is the greatest black violinist. Mm-hmm. He or she is the greatest black author or Indian
right.
author,
right.
as opposed to he or she is one of the greatest authors we have
in the
world.
But you know where that comes from, though.
Well,
Mark,
I know where it comes
from.
I'm just saying,
yeah.
but what Mark is saying is that we have to change that
in
paradigm.
In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to put the predecessor. Like, we wouldn't have to put that in front of it. But in this world, because of all the schisms, we find ourselves wanting to let people know we can ascend in certain racial, ethnic identities. And so I get that. But I'm with you all in that we hope that at some point we can take that out of every context when we're talking about art. But I get that, and I understand what that's about. But I wanted to say something about Mark, when Mark said that it, you know, something bursts. Like, he has a lot of explosions in his artistic it's a lot of blowing up and bubbling over and bursting, and I love it. Like, it makes you want to get to that gallery and see, well, what did this man create if he is bursting and things are catching on fire
scene.
And he drinking Coltrane? You know, you want to find out what does Coltrane do for you makes you so
full? You know what
full?
I say? Come over and break off a little piece of happiness at the Hot Comedy Gallery.
That's it.
Break
off some
happiness.
Exactly. Take the happiness with you. And I was thinking about this to conclude. We're saying, I mean, because that happens in your world a lot.
Yes,
of opera.
Absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing, when I was living in Europe, I wasn't a black opera singer. I was an opera singer. Mm-hmm. That's unique to the United States.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. here we have to compartmentalize everything mm-hmm. so we can decide whether it's valuable or not. As an educator, as a director of opera, preparing young singers for the world of opera, it's a challenge today. Mm-hmm. It's a big challenge. It was a challenge, you know, many years ago. But as opera is a struggle for the public to embrace in the United States, the more we diminish the education and the arts education and the exposure of students to what we do in the public schools, the more we close doors for people to make movement towards a career on the opera stage or in some of these things that we would consider the high arts.
Or getting people to encourage art and music.
Exactly.
As Michelle, you said you were so influenced by your musical perspective class
mm-hmm.
in school. Imagine
exactly.
if all those classes are removed, who mm-hmm. are going to be our future audiences
exactly.
and art appreciators?
Right, right. And you know, exactly. when I think about it, the people like Robert Shahid, who's one of the great drummers around anywhere, who co-hosts the Baltimore Brew here in the morning, also has a job.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his art.
Mm-hmm.
And makes living at both.
Mm-hmm.
And plays his drums with groups all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch him play his drums. I love watching Robert Shahid play the drums.
Mm-hmm.
If folks who haven't seen him one day, you hear him playing, because you see him go off, this look comes over his face that's like, that is like a bliss in another planet.
Mm.
And he's just on those drums playing, and just he's in it. And you see what art does. It does. You use the word. Who used transcendent? You use transcendent.
Yeah.
It does, because it becomes transcendent for you, the artist, mm-hmm. but also becomes transcendent for the audience.
And it has an amazing power to heal. Art has such a power to heal. I want to put in a little plug for a project I'm working with.
Plug away.
I'm helping them fundraise in the spirit of fundraising. But I just want to talk about it, because it's an amazing project called Force. The organization is called Force, Upsetting Rape Culture. Mm-hmm. And the project we're focusing on right now is the Monument Quilt. And we're collecting quilts made by survivors of sexual abuse and their allies from all over the country. Anyone in the U.S. can submit a quilt. This is a Baltimore-based organization. We're collecting these quilts and doing public displays of these quilts, basically creating healing spaces in public. So we did one last fall in Penn Station Plaza. We did one in front of the Capitol building in downtown Washington, D.C., and we display these quilts in which the survivors have shared their stories. So we're creating healing spaces for people to talk about rape and sexual abuse in public space. And, you know, from what we've found in these places where the quilts can be submitted by individual people, but centers all over the U.S. are hosting workshops where survivors and their allies can get together and create their own healing spaces to talk about their experiences.
And do you have a contact thing? You want to tell us when we come back from break?
Sure. TheMonumentProject.org.
We're going to take a brief break here and come right back. And this is a very powerful piece to go off with. And we're going to come back and talk about something Leah Gilmore saw with Syrian artists in the middle of conflict that she sent across Facebook, as it all fits together. Stay with us. Be happy. Think about this place of the EA and what it means to you at 410-319-8888. Wonderful musician Ami Dang, the great artist Mark Kottman, the incredible opera singer Vincent Stringer, the indie mom of comedy,
you
Michelle.
You got it right.
So don't stop calling 410-319-8888 as you hear this conversation unfold. I was thinking, Leah Gilmore, who co-hosts with me every month here on our cultural look at our life, she sent this picture over the wire, made me think about how the power of art. It was this photograph of four Syrian artists who took pieces of buildings and other objects that were blown up in the war and have covered this entire building with new art out of things that have been destroyed to try to create life. And these were men who came from all the sections of Islam and all sections of that community to come together and say, this is where we have to go in the midst of it all.
Wow.
You know, that to me just speaks volumes about the power of art.
It's very, very powerful, Mark. I wanted to mention at my gallery this Thursday, we're going to mix the arts up. I'm going to have two poets there. They'll be doing a book signing. I'm going to have Dori Carroll and Letitia Naranja. They will be at the gallery at 6 o'clock reading from their poetry books and doing book signings. So when I say it's an art blend. Right now I'm feeling a cornucopia of joy. I'm trying not to explode once again.
I think we need to explode.
We need to explode. I just want to thank WEAA, but I want to thank you, Mark, for all, you know, I'm thinking about how art is so impactful that we oftentimes take it for granted until it's not there. And I don't want us to get to that space where we start to, you know, rally around. Like, I like how you said STEAM. I have a good friend, Dr. Reagan Flowers, who was just honored at the White House, who's doing amazing work in STEM all over the country, six states and two international countries. She's doing this great work in STEM. It would be epic to add that A and make it STEAM. I really like that, to add the arts to that. That would be just as compelling, I think.
We've been talking about that at Morgan for the last couple of years, about adding STEAM to STEM. Because where would STEM be without the A? Oh. Blah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Blah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Blah.
I mean, go ahead.
That's all I could.
There's a lot of research that shows that integrating, not even in, it's one thing to put a separate class for art, but even integrating artistic activities into the way that teachers teach science and math is it completely changes the way that children learn and really, really affects their cognitive abilities
to learn. You know, I mean, math and music, it's rhythm is math.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I found that students that do well with music can do well with math.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no mistake. There's a reason why so many mathematicians are also musicians.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Why Albert Einstein played the violin.
Exactly.
Yes. Right.
That it was. And you know who Albert Einstein's, by the way, you know who Albert Einstein's best friend was?
Who's that?
I just discovered this the other day doing some research on some other stuff. Paul Robeson.
Really?
I would not doubt it.
Mm. Paul, his birthday Albert Einstein is tomorrow. And Paul Robeson.
Paul Robeson's birthday
is tomorrow.
He's an Aries.
Albert Einstein and Paul
Robeson.
He sure
Robeson. Is like me. Mine
too.
Was 2 days ago.
Happy belated birthday. Mine is April 17th.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
And today
amazing
I have to shout out to my brother, Dwight R.B. Cook, who's directing Suara Angelica. Today is his 63rd birthday, and he wouldn't mind me telling you he's 63 and proud.
Wow. Yeah, I love it.
I'll tell you, though,
the arts has shaped so much, but it would be interesting now. I'm seeing kids getting into stand-up earlier as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There was a kid at my daughter's school at the Mount Washington School, the great Mount Washington School. In the talent show in third grade, he did a stand-up comedy set. And I'm thinking to myself, to be that bold, to get up on stage in front of all your parents and all your friends and tell jokes.
That's
and
so
he
great.
Was so confident. And I was just so tickled. And he just felt good about himself. Mm-hmm. And that first laugh, his eyes just lit up like, I think I'm on to something. You don't want to ever miss that. You don't ever want to not be in the midst of that thing happening. Yes. It is beautiful to watch. And so I'm a huge fan of seeing the arts cultivated, whether, you know, in every genre. So it was just compelling.
You know, the arts brings, I mean, to children, it can turn on a light bulb.
Mm.
I mean, it can expose you to so many different things. And for me, the arts took me out of some incredibly difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was in college, I went to college, and I was reading at the fourth grade level when I got to college.
Really?
Wow.
Absolutely. But it was art that got me to college. It was my gift that got me to college.
Wow.
And when I got there, the discovery that I was reading at a fourth grade level after I was I did this assessment, once I got that corrected, man, the world just changed for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I write poetry. That's one of the things that I do. I love writing poetry. And that was one of the things that has also opened up some great opportunities for me, collaborating with composers and with other artists around poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a wordsmith, that's a really fantastic thing. The art of language, the art of poetry. So, I mean, it comes in so many different ways.
It is. I can imagine, before we have to go this break here, you know, I was thinking, about your work and how it marries cultures. I'm just what it does to your audiences.
Oh, well,
that you don't expect.
Oh, that I don't expect.
Well, what you do expect is fine.
I think some of my songs are not in English. I sing in English, and I also sing in Hindi, Punjabi, and Urdu. Some of the works that I derive from scripture and all, and I do get I like the reaction that I get after my performances, and I get to interact with the audience members. Some of them have said to me, you know, I know you were just singing about something spiritual, and I don't know what it was, but it filled me with so much love, and you know, and for me, it's also about conveying this sense of oneness, about conveying something in the room that combines all of us together. And I don't, you know, and they just say, "Oh, it just filled me with something that I can't even describe, and I don't even know what you were saying, but I love that feeling, and I know it was something spiritual." So.
Well, this has been a wonderful discussion, and we're going to continue the discussion after this brief break. Coming back to talk about the EA and why it's so important, I do want to thank the four of you for being in the studio. It's been great to have you here.
Wonderful.
But don't go away.
Just one more thing. I didn't mention where the poetry thing was going to be at my gallery. Sorry about that. The Mark Cotman Gallery, located at 1014 South Charles Street, phone number 443-872-0943. Thank you.
Great gallery. And he'll have his wine, a little treats to eat, and...
You better believe it.
You know that's right. 410-319-8888. Don't go away.